Hello, and thanks for listening to this podcast from the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries. My name's Catherine Birtle, Policy Manager in the Policy and Public Affairs team at the IFOA. This is the second in a series of podcasts the IFOA will be recording in 2020, looking at the impact of Brexit on actuaries, the industries they work in, and the customers those industries serve. I'm delighted to be joined today by Karen Brolly, Chair of the IFOA's Life Insurance Board. Karen is Head of Products in the Life and Financial Services team at Hymans Robertson. With a background in product development at a number of insurers, Karen now leads client projects looking at all aspects of the product development cycle. In the first podcast in this series, my colleague Henry Thompson spoke to Tanisha Agarwal, Account Director at Hanover Comms, about the bigger picture on Brexit and financial services. Today, we'll be focusing in on the potential implications of Brexit for UK-based life insurance customers. A separate podcast will look at the regulatory implications of Brexit for the UK insurance industry. Karen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Catherine. It's a pleasure.
So firstly, let's think ahead to the start of 2021 and the end of the Brexit transition period. As far as we can ascertain, the UK is set to leave the EU on the 31st of December this year, with or without a comprehensive trade deal. What, if anything, looks likely to change for UK insurance customers on New Year's Day?
Okay, so firstly, looking at the sort of simplest case, for those UK life insurance customers who are served by UK-based insurers, there shouldn't be any impact at all on the regulatory basis for those contracts. However, where things get a little bit more interesting, as with all things related to Brexit, is where there are cross-border activities. So in order to protect UK customers who hold policies with non-UK life insurers, the government has put in place some laws to allow providers of financial services from the European Economic Area to continue to provide those services to UK customers, and that will continue into 2021. So in particular, the government has put in place a temporary scheme to allow these EEA providers operate in the UK for a period after the UK has left the EU and while they are actually applying to get permanent FCA authorisation. So there shouldn't actually be any cliff edge events like coming into effect on the 1st of January next year. And I know we're going to talk really about life insurance customers here, but probably just worth mentioning a couple of general insurance products which UK customers should be aware of. They may already have seen this in the news, but travel insurance policies will need to be looked at carefully to check they include full local medical care, because the European Health Insurance Card that many people have used in the past will no longer have the same powers from January 2021. So your own travel insurance will need to cover that sort of healthcare aspect. And secondly, on car insurance, for those taking their cars over to Europe, it will be necessary to check the requirements of the country that you want to visit, as there may be some additional paperwork required.
Okay, and what do you think Brexit is likely to mean for insurance customers in terms of the kind of general protections that they receive?
So again, for UK firms writing business in the UK with UK customers, the current regulators and other bodies such as the Financial Ombudsman, the Financial Services Compensation Scheme, and obviously the FCA themselves, will all continue to provide a safe, well-regulated financial services market with protections should things go wrong. So no real change here in the simple example where everything's based in the UK. I was looking for some quirky examples of where things might be slightly different. So, for example, the deposit limit for bank accounts, which currently sits at 85,000. This is currently tied into an EU-defined amount in euros. So the UK presumably in the future will have the ability to change that amount on their own terms. But going back to life insurance, I think where we need to be more careful is where the protections that the FSCS currently have, we need to be very careful about where the issuer of the policy is not in the UK and won't be UK authorised. The key thing here is that UK policyholders should be told by the providers in these EEA countries what extra things they might need to do. So I would just take out extra care if you're looking at a new policy with a non-UK provider, just to check that you still have got some protections in place. Another area to think about might be data protection. All the information that we have currently is that GDPR is likely to continue in exactly the same way for the UK as it does now. We expect the UK data protection law to be aligned with GDPR and for the Information Commissioner's Office to remain the independent supervisory body regarding data protection legislation in the UK. So again, no changes there. And I guess finally, one interesting area that the FCA continually reminds us about on general protection is about scams. Unfortunately, there is the potential for Brexit to be used as another in for unscrupulous behaviours. So it's definitely something to watch out for, and the FCA have given some helpful guidance on their website.
Okay. So thinking a bit more broadly, we can probably expect that Brexit will have some impact on the stability of financial markets in the UK and overseas. What might that look like, and how has that changed in the wake of the COVID-19 outbreak?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right to bring in the COVID-19 outbreak in here. I think prior to COVID-19, my expectation was that the financial markets and the stability of those would be the area that would be most impacted by Brexit. Now that it's fully happening, we can really expect there to be some market instability after January. I mean, we've had such turbulent times already. We saw dramatic falls in 2016 after the referendum result. We then watched the markets react to each of Theresa May's attempts to reach a deal. And now this year, just as we were preparing to watch the Brexit negotiations through the transition period, our financial markets have been hit by something even bigger in reaction to the pandemic. So before we even get to the end of this year, we can expect further fluctuations in all financial markets, and this has been absolutely magnified by COVID-19. In terms of what this means for insurance products on the life insurance market, it's likely that pricing could become tighter, maybe leading to slightly higher protection premiums, maybe slightly lower annuity rates. Again, we've got interest rates that can't really go much lower unless we have to start thinking about preparing for negative interest rates. I'm not quite sure we're all ready to know how to deal with that. And then another interesting aspect, again, thinking about annuities and market volatility, as we know with pension freedoms, drawdown has become more popular than annuities, with around 80% of retirees using drawdown. So I think the attraction to drawdown will have really been tested in February and March this year, when retirees were likely to see large drops in the value of their retirement pots. And here, the shift in investment risk to an individual could really have started to hit home. So it is possible that we might see more guaranteed styles of products coming back into favour. And it will be interesting to see if, you know, all this market volatility leads to different products starting to take shape. Traditional annuities, as I've just mentioned, you know, may be difficult to price in this market in a low interest rate environment. But yeah, guarantees may become more popular if they can be done at an affordable level.
So we will have a whole separate podcast dedicated to the regulatory implications of Brexit for UK and EU insurance firms. But could you say a little bit about what it might mean for UK firms to be free of EU rules after Brexit?
Yeah, it's absolutely. There's going to be a huge debate about the extent of this. As we know, the FCA have ensured that we've got a functioning regulatory regime alongside the PRA for when we leave the transition period, because they've basically onshored all of the EU rules into the UK legislation book. My initial thoughts are that the UK probably won't move from the current Solvency II rules. I guess one way to look at this is that on day one, the UK will have the most equivalent framework to the EU of any country in the world. So a lot of thought would need to be given by the UK to actually move away from this in case they do lose any equivalence. However, it is possible that we will see some more UK-centric improvements, which potentially, if PRA, with their blessing, we could reduce the risk margin, for example, which might help again with the pricing of some products. But on this one, Catherine, as you say, the Solvency II points will be covered in a future podcast, and I'll certainly be interested to hear the thoughts of fellow members who will be much more closely aligned to the capital and the balance sheet aspects. Just on some of the other customer and product impact, and this one, I don't know how big a possibility it is, but one of the rules that came in, given to us by the European courts in the last few years, was of course the EU mandated gender neutral pricing rules. And as we all know, this had a huge impact on some important life insurance products, as well as, of course, things like car insurance. So for annuities before gender neutral pricing, the amounts paid out were traditionally lower for women when compared with men based on the longer life expectancies for females. And for life insurance products, the equalisation of pricing has meant that life insurance has become more expensive for females and less so for males. So personally, I struggle a little bit with where the fairness sits on this. The rules were brought in to remove gender inequalities. But as actuaries, we look to assess risk fairly. And you could say, you know, there are genuine differences in male and female life expectancies at the moment. So insurers have had to make big assumptions about the gender split of business that they will write. And they obviously do that in a very prudent way. So if we want to get back to maybe a bit more of a fair pricing split, it's one to watch with interest, certainly. There are other countries in the world, for example, Canada, who still absolutely use gender as a rating factor on life insurance policies. So it's possibly one that will be looked at again. And then another area where I was thinking potentially we could see some divergence away from the EU rules that generally come from EIOPA are things like MiFID II and PRIIPs in terms of how products are actually sold and distributed. So if we take PRIIPs as an example, this was EU guidance, which brought in a new version of the information document that needs to be sent out when investors are buying different funds. That came in for non-UCITS funds in 2018. But what we've seen now is that the UCITS funds are currently sitting in an exemption period for bringing in PRIIPs. And that's now been extended until January 2022. And by the time we get to that deadline, the UK regulators would obviously be able to make their own decisions about whether or not to mandate the change to KIDS or the change to the key information documents for all UCITS funds. That one would be another interesting dilemma for the UK financial services industry to make for themselves, to work out whether the advantages of bringing in that document are actually playing out against the benefits that consumers actually get from those types of things. So again, equivalence might come into play there, but I don't think that that's seen as a huge thing for benefit for investors to have that new document. So potentially another area where the UK will start to make its own decisions.
Okay, so finally, we've talked thus far about the fairly immediate term impacts of Brexit. What do you think are some of the possible longer term effects?
The most of the long term effects are probably pretty difficult to predict at this stage, but there is one area that I think is worth consideration, and that's to think about the potential for long term effects on longevity and morbidity. So I'm thinking here that if financial impacts of Brexit are as far-reaching as we think they might be and potentially leading to some further economic decline in the UK, that could lead us to experience further austerity, which many longevity experts believe can have a material impact on life expectancy, particularly among the lower socioeconomic groups. So as I mentioned earlier, it's going to now be very difficult to attribute all of the market fluctuation to Brexit. It'll be difficult to separate that out from the COVID-19 impacts. But what we can say here is that many of the government's plans that they had at the start of this year will need to be reconsidered in light of the emergency measures that they've had to make since March. So we don't want to get too political here, but of course there are politics involved. Originally, when the Conservatives under Johnson's leadership sort of came into power, there was a want from them to avoid another round of austerity. And I think they were looking to head into sort of post-Brexit world with a really strong attitude towards growth and kind of looking for economic boom times. But I think they really must look to revisit that in light of the current situation. So we're going into Brexit in a very different situation from what they expected at the start of the year. Yesterday, we heard that government borrowing for this fiscal year, so just since April, has been £128 billion so far, which is more than double the full financial year from last year of £55 billion. We're hearing stories that in the next few months, we could be facing a situation where 1 in 8 of the population are unemployed. And this is just severe financial strains, which I think we can expect to impact life expectancies, just as we've already seen a slowdown in increases to life expectancy following the post-financial crisis austerity measures. And in some ways, it's possible that even just the stress of all this uncertainty is not great for the health of the nation. So sorry, it's not a hugely positive note on, but I guess as life actuaries, this is a big area of interest for us. And I'm sure the longevity experts amongst us will continue to analyse the data and keep us updated.
Karen, thanks so much for joining me today. As I mentioned at the start, this is the second podcast in our Brexit series. You can find the first episode and all of our other Brexit content at actuaries.org.uk/Brexit. We hope you enjoyed this podcast and we'll tune in again for the other episodes in the series.